Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer.
Now, here's a six-pack of questions.
Got the professor John Clayton with us, and John, it is the dead period of the NFL season, so we start looking ahead to any deals that we think might get done. We talked some about Frank Clark, and you think the Seahawks should extend him. How about Dwayne Brown?
I think what you need to wait on Dwayne Brown, because what you have to determine with Dwayne is how much cap room you're going to need to do any other deals, because the team's sitting a little bit over $10 million of cap room at the moment. And, you still have to save, because again, that's $10 million on the top 51 players. And so you're going to have to clear a little bit of space. So, depending on how many deals you can do, whether you can get Tyler Lockett done, Justin Coleman, if you can do something with some of these other guys, then you can see how much room is there. And then when you do the deal with Dwayne Brown, you probably make it a 2 years. You take the base salary down as low as you possibly can. And so I think that's more of the balancing act of trying to do deals. And so that doesn't put him in the first wave. It puts him really in that second or third wave.
Why don't we ever talk about K.J. Wright in a contract extension?
We should. I should have gotten to him, because, I mean, that one, because I think when you start to handicap it, I mean, Coleman could be done easier. Lockett could be done easier. And really, KJ can be done pretty easy, too, because, I mean, you know what the numbers is going to be. It's going to be pretty much around $11 million, $10.5 to $11 million. That would make him the fourth or fifth highest paid 4-3 outside linebacker, and that's kind of right where it would be. Now, the one concern that you have is that'll be a third contract, and third contracts would be a little bit dangerous. They did draft Shaquem Griffin to maybe come in and maybe be an ultimate outside linebacker too. But I think that KJ should get done, because I think he means too much to this team. This team's now gone from the Legion of Boom to really a linebacker-led defense, and he's one of the linebackers that can go. And when I look at KJ, because he reminds me so much of Thomas Davis of the Carolina Panthers, Thomas is still growing strong at 34. And so here's KJ at 29, keeps himself in good shape, is mobile. And I think that he should maybe... I think Frank Clark's the most important one. KJ probably should be number two. Justin Coleman maybe number three. And then Tyler Lockett number four. And then you start to think, okay, how much room do we need, and what do we do with Dwayne Brown?
Hey, what's the status on DJ Alexander? Because I know he was at camp, but is it his shoulder, John? Is that
what's...
Yeah,
it's his shoulder. So yeah. I think he should be okay.
He's expected to be ready.
If you go back to Pete Carroll's last press conference, just about everybody is expected to be back. There's really not any real lingering concerns. Like they've been the last couple of years, they've been extra cautious. So when in doubt, they'll leave them out. So I think that's expected. But no, he should be okay.
Yeah, and I think he's one of those guys that gets lost in the shuffle. He's raw now. As a linebacker, he's got some fine tuning to do, but what a great special team player. And I saw a couple of things, when he played in that Jacksonville game after KJ went out with a concussion there, that he's missed a couple fits, but that guy can play and he can hit, and I expect him to improve as a linebacker coming up this year.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, and it's funny, because I mean, when you think about it, there isn't a lot of Pro Bowl guys from that draft. I mean, because I do chart those, and I think maybe there's about 15 or 16 from that draft. But the Seahawks got two of them, and they're two special teams guys. I mean, Tyler Lockett went to the Pro Bowl as a returner. DJ Alexander, when he was in Kansas City, he went to the Pro Bowl. And so they may not. I mean, if they carry it through the positions. Tyler Lockett obviously doing much more with his position play than you saw that Alexander. But no, Alexander's a good player, and he got a limited chance to go out there and play linebacker. I don't know if he's going to get much more, but he is a very good special teams player.
Hey, so Jarvis Landry, Brown's wide receiver now, I think he was with Miami before, he is raving about Tyrod Taylor, and that does not surprise me at all. I think Baker Mayfield's going to maybe have a little bit tougher time getting into as the starter in Cleveland, but I don't know, John. Do you ever consider, there's a chance that maybe Baker Mayfield doesn't crack the starting lineup because of Tyrod Taylor?
Well, Tyrod Taylor was brought in there to start. and buy time so they can develop Baker Mayfield. And so the intention was, and that's why they made that trade, and I think got a steal of a trade in getting Tyrod Taylor, because now they get a guy that I think is better than they think in Buffalo, because, you know, it's like I still look at him, and he's able to get 24 points a game on offense. He's mobile. I mean, he didn't maybe have the greatest numbers in the world last year. He kind of regressed compared to where he was the year before, but I think he is a really good quarterback, and you know, I think that it would not be out of the question for him to play, you know, three quarters of the season, and then they make the move to Baker Mayfield. I mean, once they're eliminated from the playoffs, which you know they will be, then that'll be that time that they'll put Baker in there. But I think that Tyrod does a good job, and really, when you think about the additions that the Browns have made, it's been smart and it's been good. You know, they've come back, and you think about the receiving core, and you got Jarvis Landry, Josh Gordon right now is on a very good place. That's working out pretty well. So all told, I mean, they're making progress. It's just they started from such a basement. You know, we only win one game in 2 years. It just has to take time to catch up.
What would happen, though, and John, this is going to require a little bit of, I don't know, patience on your part, or maybe creative, poetic license, so to speak. What if the Browns went 10-6 and made the playoffs with Tyrod Taylor as their starting quarterback, and Baker Mayfield never gets in the starting lineup this season? What would they do next year?
You mean if Baker doesn't get in and they go and make the playoffs?
Yes.
To be as happy as they could be. I mean, they would be as happy as Mariner fans. Mm-hmm. I mean, they only had one playoff since they've been there, you know, since they got back and got the franchise in 1999. I think they'd be elated. So
be pumped, but what do they do long-term at that? And I guess the example that I think of is in San Diego, because San Diego in 2004, they drafted, or was it 2005? When they drafted Philip Rivers, and they drafted him, well, I guess initially they drafted Eli Manning, but they end up with Philip Rivers, who's the number 4 overall pick. Drew Brees is their quarterback. Mm-hmm. They ended up doing really well. They made the playoffs. I think they lost in their first playoff game, but they were and then the next year, you've got the number 4 overall pick who's still sitting on the bench. Could you see a scenario where Baker is still not playing next year because they've been successful with Tyrod Taylor?
No, I think they probably would go with Baker next year because they drafted him with the intent of getting him out there, and you're sitting him for half the career. I mean, unless he pulls a Paxton Lynch and not look good, you know, that certainly would go against the idea. But no, I think that overall, they would enjoy a Tyrod Taylor season if they can do some things, but I would have to think they'll still go to Baker Mayfield. They got too much of an investment in him.
John, this is the worst story of the day, in my opinion. The NFL's PED policy allows for players who have been caught to snitch on others and be rewarded with a reduced suspension. I think that's all kinds of wrong there.
What?
John.
Really?
Yeah, that's brutal.
True. Yeah.
No, I agree.
Get stitches, Danny.
I had not heard that.
Oh, yeah.
Really? So you get in trouble and you lessen your punishment by saying, hey, but this guy's doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Up to 50%. So if you get a 4-gamer, you could get it reduced to 2.
What is wrong with the NFL? Man.
Yeah, this is...
Some of the goofy things that they're doing.
Well, I guess, you know, when you're trying to... when the police are trying to beat the chemists, sometimes you want to try to have as many allies and snitches and possible ways to try to get around the information that you can. So I can understand it, but certainly you can't appreciate that. And again, that's the one thing that's so weird about some of the NFL stuff. Now, we find there's so many little rules that we didn't even know about. That's the first time, you telling me, but when I heard about that the other day, that was the first time I heard about it. But can you imagine how welcome you're going to be in the locker room if you're a suspended guy and you got it reduced in 50% for snitching on one of your teammates?
Well, and there's no way you could keep it anonymous either, because you all of a sudden have this 2-game suspension instead of a 4 where everybody else was getting a 4.
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, you know, it's I guess if you have it so like it's a substance one, because normally you would get a 4. If it's a marijuana, you're going to get a 1 or a 2. And so you look at these and, it's funny because, I mean, we had 3 2-game suspensions. Now, obviously, Reuben Foster was not part of that because he had a gun charge and a substance charge. You know, Aaron Jones, who was just a rookie last year, is barely getting to know the players on his team. But his goes back to a marijuana arrest last year. So, but it would be interesting to see if one of these 2s come out to be a snitch.
John, have you seen the story about Ito Smith? He's the rookie running back from Atlanta.
Which one was that?
So Ito, he was born Romarius Smith, mm-hmm. but his cousin, when he was born in 1995, so that's right about the time of the OJ case, thought that little baby Romarius
looked
like Judge Ito. who is presiding over it. So his nickname has been Ito Smith, and Vaughn McClure of ESPN.com interviewed Judge Ito about it. Quote, "No, I was unaware of the existence of a pro football prospect by the name of Ito Smith. Having looked him up and discovering he is a handsome and talented fellow, certainly not a bad thing. Pro football is a tough business, and I wish him a long and healthy career."
Well, if you remember, because when we were doing the draft together, that was one of the things I did bring up.
Is that Judge Ito?
Judge
was
Ito,
the namesake
yeah. Yeah,
for
exactly.
Ito Smith.
I said, how about this
Southern
for a weird
Miss?
Story? I know we go through so many different stories because it was so fun, you know, putting together the draft stuff that we did on the podcast, and that was just a blast. But yeah, that was actually one of the things I did bring up because I mean, I'm looking there on the internet, and I didn't know this before the draft, but I was looking and saw on a tweet to that. It's like, how weird is that?
It's great. I'm rooting for Ito. I always thought Judge Ito was a pretty lovable character in the whole OJ case.
Hey, John, tell us this Janoris Jenkins. Now, he's the player, obviously, a New York Giant defensive back. He's a cornerback. He was the guy that had the dead body was found in his house, correct?
Yes.
And so what has happened since then?
Well, what's happened since then, now he had been in Florida because as soon as the mini camp ended, you know, he just got in the plane and flew down to Florida. He has a home down there. And he also has some business things he was working on because, you know, he's Jackrabbit. And so he has some Jackrabbit business. And so, he lets his brother stay at his house there. And Rennie Roberts, who is a rap singer, and they're actually collaborating on getting a song together. They're good friends, and he'll stay at Janoris's house. So some kind of altercation allegedly happened, and all of a strangulation or whatever. And so Rennie Roberts ended up, you know, dead. And now the suspect is now the brother. So, Janoris is completely innocent on this, and he has to be grieving because, one, he has to worry about the long-term future of his brother, and now he's lost one of his best friends.
Wow. That's tough, man. And going into – and they had a lot of difficulty in their defensive back room there with the Giants.
Because you had Eli Apple
acting up, and, man, and, you know, knowing now that your brother – and it happened in his house. Mm-hmm. His brother is now – arrested on suspicion of manslaughter. I mean, of one of his friends. That's going to be
best friends.
It's going to be tough to overcome for him.
Think about the emotion of that. That's got to be sad.
Yeah.
But of course, I mean, understanding, I'm sure that Jackrabbit has a lot of strange things in where he grew up because, the one reason he got the nickname, in fact, he doesn't want to be called Janoris Jenkins. He wants to be called Jackrabbit. Because I know when I interviewed him at the Super Bowl, he got in my face for saying, no, my name's Jackrabbit. It's not Janoris. And so he has a line of clothing, and he was actually good enough to give me a nice hoodie, a nice white hoodie with Jackrabbit all over it. So I really side with him, and I really like him as a player. I don't know if you've really studied him at all, Dave and Danny and Jim, but I mean, he plays cornerback almost like a center field. He's so natural in flowing toward the ball. I mean, he's a Pro Bowl caliber guy, but right now he's got some big problems.
I have not studied him, John. I'm glad that you brought all that to light there. What about the NFL supplemental draft on Wednesday? Some talk that there's some cornerbacks that are available in that the Seahawks might dive in.
Yeah, I mean, the big one, I think, is Sam Beal. He's kind of a 6'1", long, angular cornerback that is expected to maybe go as high as the third round, which would be kind of interesting to see which teams. I kind of wonder if Kansas City might be one of the teams that might go for him. Adonis is a guy that comes from Virginia Tech, and he's 6'3", and would be a perfect type of cornerback in the Seahawks defense. But I think that they're pretty well stacked right there with what they have, and I don't think they want to give up a third. I mean, they can probably – I mean, they might do it for a fifth or a sixth, but then when you take a supplemental player, for the most part, and I know I say that for a linebacker that played with Brian Bosworth, and that wasn't the case. Nowadays, with the limited number of practices, you're really drafting somebody for next year. There's just not enough time to get a supplemental player ready. That's why there's very few supplemental picks. Isaiah Battle, who the Seahawks have right now on their roster, was one of the most recent supplemental picks. Josh Gordon got there, but when you go back to the new CBA in 2011, when you take about one-third of the practice time away each year for 3 years, it takes longer to be able to do it. So, but if you think that you can get a future pick that can be a good cornerback, there's two going to be available on Wednesday.
John, you mentioned Josh Gordon, and he returned to the field last season. I'm intrigued by this Cleveland team. They've had an awful lot of draft picks, and I know that kind of now with John Dorsey there and Scott McLuhan helping, they have a more respected front office of talent evaluators. What do you think? Could you see a scenario where they turn the corner and become a team that, that is able to contend for the postseason this year?
No, I don't see it. I just it's just not there. I mean, they lose their left tackle, Joe Thomas, who is a Hall of Fame caliber left tackle. That was one loss. So they got some question marks on it. Mallard, they're thinking about maybe taking Joel Bitonio, their Pro Bowl caliber guard, and moving him out to left tackle. I don't know if that would work. You know, what they've done is I think they've really got the beginning of a nice core group on defense. That's good. They are talented at the receiver position. That's going to help. But trying to have that all to come together in 1 year, I just think is a little bit too much. Remember, when you go 1 win and 31 losses in 2 years, you have no idea how to win a football game. Now, you saw progress last year because they would go into the second half in some games and have a chance with a lead to do it, but then it would fall apart. The one thing is, it's nice to get the young talent and have it come together, but you still have to learn how to win, and that's where they're not there yet.
How about Josh Gordon? Do you think he reclaims his career?
I think he does. I think maybe he gets it this time. He's had a very good offseason. They're raving about how he looks, and certainly he realized this is the last chance. You know, you think about how long he's been in the league since being a supplemental pick. You know, he should be making big dollars right now, and he's making $790,000, the minimum, because his contract for the suspension had been told, and so he never had a chance even to get good restricted free agent money. But so far, so good, and I hope he does, because he is a really talented guy. I mean, there's a receiver who has the ability to have a 100-catch season.
Hey, John, Gus Bradley, defensive coordinator for the Los Angeles Chargers. You think he's a head coach again someday?
I think it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the one thing that unfortunately that's going to be held against him, he does it on defense. People right now in this league, owners, they're looking for offensive guys. They want the guys, they want the Sean McVays, they want the Doug Petersons. I mean, and you notice, guys that are really good defensive coaches. I mean, look how long Matt Patricia took. I know he's 43 years old, but you're kind of on the outside looking in. So I think it's going to be tough for get a job. And really, if you're Gus, you may realize maybe it's better just to be a good coordinator and not have to worry about it.
Tom Catlin.
Yeah, exactly.
Tom Catlin was that way. He's like, look, I know I'm not a head coach. I could have lived without knowing this, and I'll share it with you guys. If Wikipedia is to be believed.
Which it is.
Gus Bradley's first name.
Augustus.
Paul. Paul Bradley. I wish I didn't know that.
Here's something else I think you're going to say you wish you didn't know. I believe Gus was a punter in college.
Was he?
Oh, no.
Scroll
down farther on that Wikipedia.
Danny is heckling me right now.
I believe that Gus was a punter in
Clayton,
college.
Have you ever heckled anybody at a sporting event?
No, I have not.
Okay, and when I'm
at a sporting event, well, I'm in the press box. You get kicked out of the press box if you heckle.
Okay, but Danny heckles people. He goes to the Mariner games and he heckles people.
I have no self-respect or regard for human dignity.
Hey, Professor, where would you rank this? Like, if an NFL player did what Joey Chestnut did yesterday, 74 hot dogs in 10 minutes, what would you equate that to on a football field?
I would probably equate it to having a 200-yard rushing game. Maybe have a 200-yard pass receiving game. I mean, because I just think it's incredible. I mean, and think that really Joey Chestnut transitions now into NFL-type thinking, because if you look at Darren Revelle yesterday, he was tweeting out in a mad sense that they should have replay because they screwed up the count. I think they had him at 64, and so Dean Blandino may have to come and save this event because, here's Joey Chestnut trying to win his 11th, and they screwed up the number of times. It's like they couldn't keep track of how good he's doing this.
This is the news report that I have printed out right in front of me in anticipation of this moment. I thought it would come up later, but it's here, by Darren Revelle. Electronic technology might be coming to Nathan's famous hot dog eating contest. Rich Shea, the president of Major League Eating, yes, it is an actual organization, which sanctions the event, told ESPN on Thursday that, quote, yesterday's incident might be the impetus to bring competitive eating into the digital age, end quote. The original hot dog and bun count for Joey Chestnut was 64, but eventually was increased to a record 74 when it was discovered that two cleared plates were missed. Competitor Carmen Cincotti was slighted even more. His unofficial count was 45. Officially, he ended with 64. Quote, We were embarrassed, said Shea, who was the color commentator on ESPN's broadcast on Wednesday. And while even NFL referees make mistakes at the highest level, we have to show an effort to change the old way. This isn't your father's hot dog eating contest. There's a lot more on the line, end quote. Now, it was significant for this reason. Joey Chestnut was going to win either way.
Right.
But for all the people that wagered on it.
Yeah, the over-under was 71, I think.
Correct. So everybody went from losing having the over to winning having the over based on the recalibrated hot dog slash bun consumption.
But can you imagine the trauma if you're Joey Chestnut and you're stuffing these buns and dogs down your throat at such a fast pace and they can't even keep up with it to a point that you know you're at 74 because, I mean, Joey said immediately after the event that he had 74 and they had to, you know, go back after the show and then count it up to make it official because they wouldn't even give the official count because they had to go watch replay, you know, watch the show again to be able to get it. I mean, how bad is that?
Well, can you imagine the trauma of... What do you think happens after you eat 70 hot dogs?
Well, that's what I thought was going to happen, where he's like, hey, man, you only ate 64. He's like, I totally ate 74. They're like, prove it. And he's like, Ralph, count it up.
Give it a Ralph, yeah.
Instant regurgitation.
That might be one of the funniest things I've heard, Jim, going, oh, yeah, the MLE, Major League Eating. By the way, I just want to clear this up. It looks like Gus Bradley at North Dakota State University was a free safety and served as a punter also.
Oh, there you go. He's John Ryan. He was John Ryan.
Those were my words, but this is what I'm gleaning from.
It was a free safety and a punter. Does it change the way you view him, or do you think he was
probably
a Swiss Army knife?
I used to kick off in high school.
Oh, really?
Coach Joe Sellers had me kick off, yeah.
Were you a straight-on guy?
Yeah. I don't know if I was any good or not. I don't even remember.
It's funny when you say straight on guy, a lot of people that are younger don't know what that means.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Because of soccer style kickers.
Right.
Pete Gogolak, was he straight on?
No, he was one of the first guys to come in and do the soccer style.
Oh, is that right?
How about the Zendejas? I miss the Zendejas.
Well, particularly when you you know, celebrate and blow out your knee.
Yeah. No, that's the Grammaticus.
Oh, that's the Grammaticus.
Different family entirely. Also, there was the one kicker who was a really good golfer, Del Greco.
Al Del Greco. Who was the best straight-on kicker in history, John? Mark Mosley? Tom Dempsey?
I think you have to go with Dempsey, you know, with that
underfoot. Dempsey had an advantage, though. Because
he had the square foot.
Yeah, he was able to really boot it. Because
so a handicap is an advantage.
Well, he was able to kick it farther.
Yeah, but, you know, somebody else could have gotten a square.
That's true.
Shoe.
Put it there.
To kick. Yeah. My Coach Sellers used to tie my... first cleat up, like with a shoestring, and it went around the back of my calf, and then it went down, I think, or the back of the shoe, and then it pulled up the tip of your shoe, of your cleats.
So would you toe punch it?
Yeah.
And you had a square toe.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, sort of simulated a square toe.
That is fascinating.
I hope we get back to that someday.
Yeah, I hope
it's
we never talk about kicking.
It's funny how Jim just lights up whenever we talk about kicking.
I love kicking and punting.
All right, John, we appreciate it. We look forward to talking to you tomorrow.
Okay, thanks.
If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Well, the Mariners' 8-game winning streak was snapped, but there's a lot of reasons to be excited for tonight's game. We'll count them down next.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and Moore, streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
It's the Happy Hour. It's brought to you by Heritage Distillings, BSB, and Brown Sugar Bourbon. And the Mariners return to the field tonight. They've had their final game of the 3-game series against the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. You'll have pregame show here after our show starting at 6 o'clock with the first pitch coming up at 7:10 right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And Seattle's formula for success this year, and there's been a conversation about, Jerry DePoto mentioned it to the run differential, that they've gotten the most out of the runs that they have scored and they've been able to manage it. There's also a point that this team is put together to be successful in these types of games with offense that can both win with power and manufacture runs and has as good a lineup 1 through 9. I think the length of the lineup is one of the bigger strengths of this team. And then they've got a really good bullpen. And the way that they answered that, going 1-5 on that road trip to first to New York and then to Boston and bounce back and won 8 in a row after that, I think spoke to the resiliency. I don't have a lot of questions about sort of how this team will respond to losing yesterday's game.
I don't see him going the way of the last 2 years of what we've seen where they just go in the tank and stay there. There's just no way. The other thing is, and the Angels did this a little bit yesterday where they got some answers in their lineup from guys that weren't contributing. Cole Calhoun, I think he had 3 hits over the weekend, 3 RBIs. He's batting 180 this year. Yeah,
he smashed a home run yesterday too. He's a better player than that. Is it? That's one of the bigger surprises. Like when I saw what his average was, I was like, "Really? Mm-hmm. He's hitting under 200?" Like Zunino is a bummer that he's struggled at the plate, but unfortunately, we've seen that from Zunino before. I was really surprised to see what Cole Calhoun's hitting.
Yeah, and he's 500 over the last 3 games, 4 RBIs. And then they got something from Valbuena, your boy, Valbuena. But
it might have been my fault.
Yeah, you might have caused that. But, you know, you look at, I mean, and we talked to Jerry DePoto about this. Who is most responsible for this team? If you had to name one person, and there's so many answers to that. You could pick Ryan Healy. He never ceases to amaze me how I don't remember the last time he didn't scoop a ball. And he's just really good defensively. And then, you know, he goes on tears where he's hitting the ball really well. You're just getting answers from all kinds of different places. And then, as you pointed out, Danny, I mean, the window's not closing on this team. You've got some young guys like Marco Gonzalez that are sub 30 years old and that are up-and-coming good players like Gene Segura and Mitch Haniger. So it's pretty exciting. I'm really hoping that Marco has a really good outing because we got him at the Cantina tomorrow.
We are going to talk to him at 2:00, so hopefully that'll be coming off of another strong performance. He threw his first complete game. Was an out away from throwing a shutout last Friday in that game.
Yeah, are you surprised that Zunino's out of the lineup for the second straight day? I mentioned that to DePoto, and Chris Herrmann will be starting again. And it sounds like Zunino's been doing some work with a hitting instructor that helped him a lot down there in Tacoma last year. And we saw results last year with Zunino hitting 250 and having the 25 home runs. So he's at 189. It was encouraging to see him walk and get a base hit yesterday, but I thought maybe they would use that momentum and have him back in there. The Angels have a right-hander going, so I guess you can make a case of having Herrmann out there with a left-handed bat, but still surprising to me anyway that he's not out there tonight.
Curtis made the point that they've seen David Freitas has been sighted in the vicinity of Seattle.
Yeah, I believe he is at Safeco Field right now, and he's there as a precaution in case Mike Zunino might need disabled this time.
And kind of the thought that Zunino might have a sore ankle. Zunino didn't, when he was thrown out at home in the ninth inning last night, he didn't slide. And that was, I thought that was a little bit unusual, a little bit surprising. And that might also explain why he didn't try to score on the pop fly that was hit earlier in the inning, which it seemed it was plenty deep enough to score
anyone that
would be there.
Well, maybe that explains it then. Freitas, I saw Mike Curto in his blog down there, Tacoma Rainiers, talking about Freitas has a 10-game hitting streak with the Rainiers. And again, I always run the danger of taking those PCL
bring him up.
Yeah. But no, Freitas, I like Freitas. But, boy, hard to hear that about Zunino. I didn't know that he had an ankle injury.
Seeing what he was, he came in yesterday as a pinch hitter late. He drew a walk and then did have a base hit that was there. The length of Seattle's lineup, and I think that that's one thing that maybe we haven't discussed enough, that 1 through 9, and I feel like usually that's something that gets said every year in spring training. People will talk about like whether it's all the things they worked on. We got a longer lineup this time. We really feel good about things 1 through 9. And I usually think that about the time the season starts, you see the same old thing. This Mariners team, and probably Ben Gamble's the best example of that, a guy who's been hitting 300 for the past month and a half, who is in the lower third of your lineup. And Zunino, while his average has been below what you would consider acceptable, he's still got some tremendous power down there, that the bottom of their lineup has been very, very productive.
Well, and much like the team this year, I expect Guillermo Heredia, Mike Zunino, guys that are slumping right now to come back. I think that's almost a given. And the timing is really good on it too, right? Not only getting hits, it's the timeliness. We talked about timeliness pitching and as far as scoring runs, but yeah, they've all been able to kind of pick each other up. So I feel like it's an inevitability that you're going to see Zunino at least get above 200, and if he can keep smashing home runs almost out of the park, then we'll be happy with that.
The other thing we see tonight is that you see Gamble and Span both in the lineup. Not a shock given you got a right-hander that's throwing, but you've got both Gamble and Spann, where Spann's in left field, Gamble playing right, and that leaves Mitch Haniger playing center field. So that's something that we might see more of, as of the three outfielders that they have, or the four outfielders that they have, Heredia is the one right now who's kind of having a hard time finding. He's the one whose everyday status is probably most in doubt based on what we've seen.
Yeah, you probably got to balance it out with how good he is defensively in center field. He's the best center fielder with what he's doing at the plate. And somehow Service has managed to get the best out of both Spann and Gamble, both left-handed hitters, and playing one guy one night and another guy the next. And it's good to see them both in the lineup. I got Berea going, a right-hander for the Angels tonight. And Danny, you talked about the lineup, and we're used to seeing the first five with Gordon and Segura, Haniger, Cruz, and Seager. And then tonight you look at Spann. I love Spann in the batter's box, just that veteran presence, that savvy that he has, working the count. So, I mean, as a six hitter. And then Ryan Healy with his 17 home runs as a number seven hitter. Ben Gamble, you mentioned, hitting 300, and he's your eight hitter. And then Chris Herman tonight. And so I guess that's the only drop-off to Chris Herman. But I like Herman a little bit, too, there at number nine.
It is the happy hour. It's brought to you by Heritage Distillings, BSB, the brown sugar bourbon. And Stephen A. Smith has maybe the second favorite thing that I've heard him say. You also hear the first. That's coming up next.
What would you do to knock him off? I mean, Joey Chestnut, guy's incredible.
I would ignore him. That's what I would do.
No, do you think there's anybody that's an up-and-coming hot dog eater that's thinking, man, I'm going after Chestnut?
I don't know, Jim. I don't follow the MLE.
Major League Eating. Like, isn't that... That's absurd. Do we need that?
I've never even laid eyes on Joey Chestnut. How big is he?
He's not a big 6'1", dude. 6'1", 230.
Not a big dude.
He's 230?
We have 240 today.
Yeah.
Most of the more than that.
Most of the competitive eaters are actually... not svelte, but some of them are. Like, it takes conditioning.
It's just so disgusting to me. Oh, yeah, I have seen him before. His nickname is Jaws, by the way. 6'1". Yeah, looks like he's around 220 pounds.
But he's probably got a good life going, though, don't you think?
Sure. But
does he enjoy it? Like, do you think, like, before this, does he get, like, his adrenaline flowing and he get fired up?
You watch how it looks when they're eating and how much they're sweating and how their face looks. It seems like it's a feat of pain endurance and discomfort.
And so you could say the same football players, you know you're going to be in pain, so you go out there and you put your health on the line.
But when you hit somebody and make a tackle, it feels really good. There's nothing that looks to be enjoyable about the actual activity that they're doing.
Danny, you don't think when hot dog number 73 goes down his gullet, he's not feeling the same kind of...
No, I think he's like, I'm going to pop. I'm
going to
pop.
Doug Baldwin catching a pass in the end zone?
He's like, no, I've trained for this. I've drank gallons of water in 30 seconds before to train and expand my stomach. I'm not actually physically going to pop.
I just think it's interesting. I don't know why people have to give it such a hard time. Just take it for what it is. It's one day a year. There's a guy eating a bunch of hot dogs, and he's entertaining. Is there something really wrong with that? I mean, I see people, oh, this is what's wrong with America. Well, so what? Just eating a bunch of food? Who cares?
Oh, whoa. This is what's great about America. Are you kidding me? Have you seen this pile of hot dogs in front of him?
Yeah.
The thing that grosses me out, I'm like, where does it go?
Well, but how's it, like, what's his day like today?
Yeah.
I'm not just talking about, you know, going to the bathroom or whatever, but he's just, and when do you eat again after you're done? I mean, do you go another... 2 or 3 days with eating? Or I know at times when I've, like, gorged myself, it seems like for some reason you've stretched out your stomach and you feel hungry quicker the next day.
Yeah, there's a whole theory to shrinking your stomach.
And what would you eat? Like, today,
salad.
If you're Joey Chestnut, what would you have? What would you be craving?
Not hot dogs.
Wheat thins.
Wheat thins.
To New York City, all the way out here in L.A. where I'm at right now. Everybody's talking. Oh, my God, just do away with the NBA. You've got memes on Twitter.
All right, I like Stephen A. Smith.
Memes?
That's the first time I've liked Stephen A. Smith for screwing up the whole... because I think memes are stupid anyway, whether they're memes or memes. And the fact that he screwed that up and everybody giving him a hard time, how can Stephen A. Smith not know that they're memes? Well, I think it's cool that he didn't, so I like him for
maybe
that.
Maybe
it's the
it
first time
purpose.
I've liked Stephen A. Smith.
Maybe he did it on purpose.
Do you remember when Stephen A. said that Jim was just fishing for sound bites?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was the Sherman thing.
That was the only thing that really bothered me about that.
You did not like that Stephen A. Smith said it was a journalist in there fishing for sound bites.
Yeah. Well, you know, you look at some guy that people are going, yeah, Stephen A., yeah, yeah, you tell it like it is. Well, no, he doesn't. Not all the time.
How about this one?
I'm so damn disgusted.
When he talked about Lamar Odom, who was on crack.
Do you think he really feels that passionate about Lamar Odom, or is it the fact that he gets seven figures a year that tells himself when he goes in there, you know, instead of saying I'm really disgusted with Lamar Odom, I'm going to go, I'm so damn disgusted with Lamar Odom. You know, I could do that too for seven figures.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, let's go.
Was it?
Yeah, come on. Now you.
I know, but Pridemore's not going to give me seven figures.
Maybe.
Not with that attitude.
No, I don't think so. He'll give me a go Cougs, but no, I don't think that's going to happen.
On the one hand, you have Jim Moore like, who really cares about hot dog eating? So they do it once a year. Why do you have to do a big... Maybe you need to come in and say, I'm so darn disgusted.
His very first move as the executive was to sign Lamar Odom, who was on crack.
I will never not laugh when I hear that. On crack!
Righty on lefty, first pitch by Duval. Swing, and that's foul. Straight back, and off my computer. Oh, my goodness. That just happened. So my computer is completely cracked. And this became one of the worst days I have had in quite some time.
How do you play it off?
He sounded cheery when he said it was the worst day in his life. I always, do you ever worry or wonder how you would react? You see the guy catch the one in the beer the other day?
Yeah, Nelson Cruz's home run.
Yeah.
That was fantastic.
Did he actually catch it?
Yes.
I didn't think he did either. And it was, you could clearly see it in the bottom.
The guy next to him kind of reacts because the beer goes spilling everywhere. And then you see he's like, then he goes from being mad that beer's all over him to being impressed.
Do you go back to the concessionaire when something like that happens and see if you can get a refill?
Heck yeah.
Instead of paying $10? And would they give you a refill for that?
They certainly should if you caught a foul ball in it.
I would think so. Remember when the gal got hit in it? Right in the middle of her chest out there the other day. The response team came and they gave her ice and everything. I think they try to take care of people that come close to whether it's a home run or a foul ball.
Yeah, that was there. Would you try to get a refill on your beer?
Probably. That was the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp announcer.
Which is pretty good. I think we should have a league full of oxymorons.
Should we?
Jumbo Shrimp, Military Intelligence, Working Press, Buenos Aires Smog. What would some of the other oxymorons that you could get out there be?
I can't think that quick on my feet, Danny. I would need a whole break to come up with something. Probably need a whole day.
I'm so darn disgusted. Jim Moore can't come up with one oxymoron.
I want to know what, and it was Roger Hoover, I want to know what else happened during his day. It couldn't have just been one foul ball that wrecked the laptop that called it the worst day ever.
Well, we've seen people's emails go down and call it the worst day
of
their life.
That's true. That's true. Things that have happened. I do have a question, though, because there was a point where I believe Jim Moore used a laptop as a frisbee in the kingdom and chucked it down onto the seats down below.
Or what?
You broke a laptop.
No, I broke a laptop when I was home. Yeah,
oh, okay.
It was a bad day with trying to... Kind of like today when I was trying to print out my Bark in the Park tickets.
Yeah.
I was having a heck of a time, and you helped me with that. And I literally smashed a laptop that I had from the Post Intelligencer to smithereens, and it felt really good until I had to pay $1,800 for it.
Why didn't you tell them that a foul ball came into the press box, hit the computer?
How'd you do it, by the way? Because I also punched a laptop one time. Just the screen was open, and I got so mad, I just punched it, and it cracked the whole screen. I took it to a guy, and he's like, what happened here? I was like, I dropped it.
Well,
did you slam it?
Yours was still in the kind of shape that you could try and salvage it. Mine was smithereens because I threw it down, then I picked it up, threw it down again, picked it up, threw it down again, and then I stomped on it about 10 times.
What was this about?
It was just because
we're going to get to the more of this segment, exactly the mechanics of how it was destroyed and whether Carlos Gomez would be impressed. We'll do that next.
Who was on crack?